Now Aisha was aboard the Wag, squirming uncomfortably as it rolled across the rutted, churned-up desert, shifting ever more uncomfortably on the bench seat, and hoping that the motion of the Wag wouldn't cause the knife to open. She had to get it out soon, but how was another matter.
What the fuck are you doing?
I need a piss, limb dick.
Shit, you pick your fucking moments, don't you? We're not gonna stop the Wag and let you out behind a rock, no matter who you are. You'll have to do it as best you can in a corner.
The sec man pointed to a slop bucket in the corner near the bolted rear doors. He felt safe offering her this, as the Wag was in the middle of the convoy. Even if she felt inclined to dive out of the rear door, there would be a Wag on their tail that would pick her up, if it didn't chill her first by running her over. Aisha stood unsteadily, her legs numb from the journey, and her balance unsure as the Wag swung across the rutted desert. As she steadied herself, she took the opportunity to look around at the other women in the Wag. Most of them looked beaten and defeated. One she recognized, a tall, broad woman with a large bust and wide hips. Her sharp-nosed face and prominent teeth were framed by a shock of raven hair that fell in a mane over her shoulders and down her back. Despite the lack of food that had plagued Charity, she had still kept a lot of meat on her bones, in the same basic shape that she always had. And yet, if you looked closely, you could see the folds of loose skin beginning around her neck and shoulders, and the sag of her bosom where the flesh was falling off, leaving baggy, empty skin behind. She was looking down, had been for most of the journey, and only looked up on hearing Aisha move. It was Anita, who had worked at the so-called palace of the Baron as a cook, and had also whored for him when he had felt the urge in the still of the night. She had thought that lending her favors to the Baron may have spared her, but she had already borne two children to different fathers, proving her fertility, and the Baron had picked her as one of the first to board the Wag. She was only in her mid-30s, with plenty of time to bear more children for the desperate men of Summerfield. Aisha despised the woman. She had been sly and bitchy to the girl when the Baron had been absent, yet sweet and nice to her when he was around. Yet it gave her little pleasure to see the woman so defeated. As she gazed up, her eyes meeting Aisha's, the girl could see that Anita had been crying the whole time since they had left the Ville, her eyes little more than bloodshot orbs rimmed with sore, puffy flesh. This woman's resignation and defeat made Aisha even more determined to meet her side of the bargain with the Hellbenders, with Danny, or to be chilled in the attempt. Anything would be better than to end up like this pathetic specimen. Casting a swift yet penetrating survey over the rest of the women in the Wag, she could see that the vast majority of them fell into the same category as Anita. There were only a couple of exceptions, one of them being a tall and lithe girl who was of mixed white and black parentage. She had a firm figure, lightly muscled and highly toned, with large brown eyes that met Aisha's with an unflinching gaze. As their eyes met, it was as though some kind of understanding was reached between them, without the need for words. Both recognized the will to survive. The girl had long plaits that were tied back into a ponytail at the back of her head, accentuating her perfect cheekbones. She had a pride and hauteur in her bearing that told Aisha that she wouldn't be found wanting. The girl's ponytail moved slightly as she nodded. Aisha moved to the back of the Wag and turned to face the sec man who was watching her intently.
So what do you think I'm gonna do? Try and overpower you with a jet of piss? Or is that how you get your kicks, watching young girls?
The sec man tightened in his seat, his body rigid with rage.
You better watch your mouth, bitch, or I'll forget who you are.
And why you can't touch me?
The sec man was about to say something more when the sec riding shotgun turned and addressed him.
For fuck's sake, let her do it in peace. Anything to stop that damn whining. She'll get what she deserves soon enough.
Yeah, Jesus. I feel sorry for the stupid son of a bitch who's getting her.
Maybe you're right. I'll hold that thought for a while. Hell, why not? Let the bitch piss in peace.
He turned away, facing the front of the Wag, although his grip tightened instinctively on the Uzi. Aisha had to hope that the sec man didn't have an inkling of what she was about to do, or else the whole thing was blown before she had even begun. The girl unbuttoned her jeans and let them fall from her hips. She had forsworn underwear for ease at this moment, and thanked whatever had made her choose this as she reached into herself and fumbled for the end of the knife stock. Looking up desperately, she could see that some of the women were watching her with puzzlement, while others were still looking away. The beautiful dark girl was looking directly at her, but as she was in line of sight of the sect man, she kept her face impassive. Mostly, it seemed that the women, if they cared at all, were puzzled in a lackadaisical way as to why she seemed to be playing with herself rather than pissing. She was aware that the sect man would become suspicious if he didn't hear her, so when she had extracted the knife, she tried to force something out to sound in the bucket.
Oh, thank God.
The knife sat in her palm as she rapidly hitched up her jeans and secured them. She took two strides forward, palming the knife so that the blade shot out away from her body as she triggered the mechanism.
What the fuck?
The sect man recognized the sound and swung around in his seat to face her, bringing up the Uzi.
Aisha, what are you doing with that?
Anita's words distracted the sect man. He turned his head to the sound of Anita's voice.
Shut up!
Aisha sliced across the man's exposed throat with the knife. The dark girl was swift, her reaction sure. As the sect man choked, she shot out of her seat and grabbed the Uzi, wrestling it from his grasp and turning to cover the sect man riding shotgun, who had turned at the sound of activity in the rear of the wag. She clicked off the safety and held the blaster firmly in her hands. She placed the muzzle against the driver's temple.
Shit!
His hands started inching toward his holstered blaster.
Don't even think about it unless you want to be spread over the windshield. I think we're in charge now. Right, babe?
The journey was proving long and arduous. It was approaching the middle of the day, and the sun bore down on the Hellbender's convoy with relentless force. Inside the wags, the heat built up to a humid, stifling pitch. For those who were using the old pre-dark military wags that had been left in the redoubt, it was slightly more bearable, the insulation inside the wags cutting down some of the heat that was stored in the metal. Although these wags also had air conditioning, the drivers had been instructed by Corell not to use it, as it would eat up more fuel, and the gaunt men wanted to make sure they had enough to get them to the rendezvous point and also to carry out any maneuvers they may need to make without the wags running dry and spoiling the military action. But it wasn't just the heat. The track they were taking was across desert terrain that had been muddied by the lashing chem rains and churned up into a quagmire. This was now drying, the ridges of wind-driven mud now becoming hard obstructions beneath the wheels of the wags, making steering hard and bumping the vehicles and their contents uncomfortably across the desert floor. Spotting anything was hard, as the powdery soil was becoming dust, driven up in clouds from the hard ridges by the constant disturbance of the wag wheels, the resultant dust clouds making visibility poor at times. It was easiest for the front wag, piloted by Corell. For JB, Lonnie, and those wag drivers that followed them, things were proving to be at times disorienting. JB had to swerve hard to avoid a deep rut that came out of a dust cloud at the last moment.
If we all make it to the right place at the right time, and in one piece, that'll be the biggest achievement of all.
That's when we get to the hard part. We have to be disciplined and motivated.
Sweetie, you can be as disciplined and motivated as you like, but you need to get to the enemy first, and this is a real bastard.
You're not kidding, Millie. This is bad enough for me, but for those behind...
Jenny shifted in her seat and looked to the back of the wag. It was closed in with no windows but a sec monitor that gave them a rear view via a camera in the frame of the vehicle. The monitor still worked, and one of Corell's men watched it.
What's happening back there?
Who the fuck can tell? He's right, Jenny. There's nothing but dust back there. I bet they can't see a thing.
This sentiment was echoed by Lonnie, the driver of the next wag back, but with a little more exasperation.
Fuck it. Why don't they watch where they're going? Shit. How are we supposed to know where we are when there's nothing but dust all around?
Just follow, for fuck's sake. Ow! Fucking watch it, Lonnie.
How can I? I can't see what I'm supposed to be following.
Hey, Doc.
Yes, lad? Do you wish a few moments of discursive diversion?
No, I want to talk about something.
Then pray tell me what it is.
I've been thinking, Doc, and I'm wondering if I should mention this.
Certainly. I would be only too pleased to advise you. Provided, of course, you tell me what it is that you wish advice upon.
Yeah, funny, Doc, really funny. But it could be important.
Then go ahead, young Dean.
Well, if Lonnie's having this trouble, and all the wags behind are getting it worse, then what's it going to be like when we mount the ambush? There won't be just our wags, there'll be convoys from Summerfield and Charity as well.
There will be a maelstrom of dust and a plethora of confusion.
Exactly, I think.
I do think this needs mentioning.
You hear that, Lonnie?
Yeah, I caught the general idea. Think the two ways will work yet?
They may over a short distance. I'll keep it brief, because you never know who may be listening.
I don't reckon that they've got radio equipment.
Maybe do, if find spy.
Fuck, I hope not.
Jack had been apparently sleeping, but as was his way, he had kept his senses alert and had awakened at the sound of Dean's voice. Dean picked up the radio handset.
WAG 3 to WAG 1. WAG 3 to WAG 1.
Who the fuck is this? Radios are for emergency use only.
This is an emergency. The drivers can't see where they're going. Somebody's gonna crash. And it's only gonna get worse when we get to the ambush. All those wags and all this dust, how are we gonna be able to tell who's who?
Fuck that. If we stick to the basic plan, then we'll be in close enough to see what's going on in the clouds. If we move swiftly, then we'll pin them down in such a way that they won't be able to move out of formation without running straight into us. In which case, we just blast the fuckers anyway. Besides, the rendezvous point is hemmed in on all sides by outcrops. The chem storm won't have been able to blow up so hard in there, so the ground shouldn't be so churned up.
Carell put down the handset and returned his attention fully to the vast expanse of desert that lay ahead. In the far distance, almost over the horizon, and approximately another half hour's drive away, Ryan and Christy could see a small cluster of rocks.
That's it.
Carell kept one hand on the wheel of the wag, while with the other, he cradled the box on his lap.
Soon. Very soon.
Ryan wasn't sure, but it seemed as though Carell was addressing the box.